Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues. We're here on the radio every Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country 107.7 FM and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. You may also listen to the podcast at koacountry1077.com or at lava1053.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Hawaii County is subject to almost every possible natural disaster, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, tsunami, and now possibly even man-made disasters such as a bomb strike. That's why Hawaii County Civil Defense is such a key agency within the county. Over the years, Civil Defense has been invaluable at helping the county and its people be prepared for these disasters, and they've been invaluable at responding. Today we'll get an update on Hawaii County Civil Defense as it is today from Civil Defense Administrator as of January 3, 2017, Talmadge Magno. Mr. Magno was born and raised in Mountain View. He worked as a park ranger in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, serving in law enforcement and working in special operations, a position that took him around the country to several natural disasters. Mr. Magno retired in 2015 after 30 years of park service. Good morning. Aloha, Talmadge.
Aloha.
So, Talmadge, first give us the basic. What exactly is Hawaii County Civil Defense? What are your responsibilities and functions?
The main function is to support the county, other departments, and get information out to the public with anything that's going to impact them or cause a hazard to their daily lives or their work lives.
And when you say because of a hazard, really it's any hazard that could happen on this island, from car accidents to fires to anything else, yeah?
Absolutely. Any impacts that could cause delays in commuters or to the visitors, all the way to the real big natural disasters.
How many personnel do you have at Civil Defense? Just tell us about your staff.
When we're fully staffed, we have 8 people here.
And what kind of functions do they do?
Well, we've got the administrative staff that assists me in leading the planning and the actions that we take out in the field. And then we've got the office staff that keep that part of the operation running. Then we've got a couple staff officers and a PIO and recovery specialists that work those aspects of the operation.
So they basically would assist. We could call any of them to get an update if there were a disaster or whatever.
Yes. What we do is make sure that everybody's got the same message, so that it's going out to the public and the same information is getting out. And I want to back up a little bit when I mentioned that, you know, I have only 8 people here. But in a time of emergency, when there's a declaration, all county, and in the case of a state emergency, all those employees become emergency workers as well. So I have them as a resource to work any kind of incidents.
Well, we're recording this interview in the Emergency Operations Center, and we've been here before, but I know that the way this is set up that is that if you have a disaster, everybody has an assigned spot and an assigned role, and that would include county employees who are in fire, police, public works, all the departments, yes?
Yes. County, state, federal, and our non-government organizations.
And what kind of non-government organizations would those be?
You have Red Cross. That's a real easy one. That's the main one that comes to mind right now. But yeah, you got Red Cross. But everybody's that's a player will be here.
Good. Now, the county mayor is officially, by statute, the head of emergency management in the county. So to what degree is Hawaii County Civil Defense autonomous? How much energy does the mayor put into this particular function?
He puts in quite a bit. You know, when I came into this position, I understand, you know, he had 24 years as a civil defense administrator. I kind of look at it as a positive thing because he's got so much experience, education under his belt with this field that, you know, it's invaluable as far as the information he gives us. So he's quite active with the emergency roles.
To what degree, though, are you autonomous? And I ask that, for example, when there is a major car accident or something that really needs a civil defense message pushed out fast, do you go back through the mayor to get the okay on that? Can you send that out on your own? Because I know for a while civil defense was running all the messaging through the county mayor when you first started early on in his administration this time. So,
and you're correct. Initially, it was that way. And, you know, as we got into the, I guess, the quality of the message that he preferred, then we became, you know, pretty much independent. But there is still the big incidents, and we recognize that he'll be in here. You know, anytime there's an earthquake, he usually beats us to the office.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, yeah, so we understand that. He's passionate about the operation. He realizes, you know, what it means to the island. And so, you know, he responds. But like I said, we've become independent on those more day-to-day type operations.
Well, obviously, the people in the county all depend on Hawaii County Civil Defense to get the message out fast, and it's really helpful, particularly because Civil Defense uses a direct-to-the-people system, a Blackboard messaging system, so anybody can get a message directly from Hawaii County Civil Defense.
Yes.
That's important. How do people sign up to be on that if they are not getting messages directly from Civil Defense? Where do they sign up?
Well, there's two systems I'd like to encourage people to sign up for. Ours, you can go to our website and actually sign up for our Blackboard, as well as you can sign up for the police's Nixle system. You know, some people kind of call back and say they want to be removed. They say it's kind of bothersome, but I think it's good to know, you know, what's going on, both from the police side and from our side.
I think most people I know who have subscribed to both the Blackboard system through Hawaii County Civil Defense and to the police department Nixle are very happy they're on it, because it's good to get those immediate announcements of road closures, traffic problems, whether it's to know that there's not a problem where you are or that there is. Now, what's the relationship of Hawaii County Civil Defense with state emergency management?
Well, the way the law was rewritten, 127A, is now Hawaii Emergency Management Administration, they're like a support role now. They support all the civil defense and emergency management agencies in the counties.
So the state supports the counties?
Yes. Under the situation where it's a governor's declaration, they become the lead.
To what degree do you interact with state emergency management on a daily or weekly or monthly basis? Tell us how that works.
Well, obviously, because of the state we're in right now, pretty much almost daily, and with email and so forth, it is multiple times daily. But, you know, at least weekly, we've been face-to-face now with them, either going to Oahu or they come here.
Really?
Yes.
And you say because of the state we're in, what state is that?
Well, dealing with the nuclear threat, the possible nuclear threat.
I do want to ask you about that in a little bit. That's very interesting, because interesting that you're meeting weekly with them about that. Actually, why don't you tell us about that now? What have they told you about what would actually happen were North Korea to drop an atomic bomb on Oahu, if they chose to do that, which everybody, all the experts say is highly unlikely, but if that were to occur, what has state emergency management told you about physically what would happen?
There's multiple scenarios, and because of the nature of what the explosive device might be and where impact would be, kind of depends on what the outcome would be for, like, us here on the Hawaii Island. The probability is very low that any of this will happen, but the government emergency management understands that we need to plan ahead, we need to do something, put some plans in place in case it happens. So we're in the process of putting that together along with state emergency management. They'll be coming out with some public service announcements, and we'll be doing some briefings to different organizations and coming out to the public shortly with messages.
Well, state civil defense had initially put out something that if there was a nuclear bomb dropped in the state, that people should go inside and wait. What exactly would people be waiting for, and how would they get the information that they're waiting for? What's your sense of that?
Well, the different programs that are out there are tracking what's going on in North Korea. So if there's a launch shortly after, they would know pretty good what the targeted area is. So an alert would be put out, and you know, that's when they say that people should be taking action to, you know, I guess, prevent less injury from fallout. If you're going to be in an impact area, no matter where it is, whether it's Hawaii or whatever landmass they're looking for, if you're going to be in an impact area, there's going to be death and injury. There's going to be radiation impacts to the people that are hit by the fallout. So we've got to prepare for that level of impact. Then we've got to prepare for the level of just dealing with fallouts.
And so what are people supposed to do? First of all, if a nuclear bomb was dropped on Oahu, that's about 200 miles from the Big Island, have they told you what the impact would be on the Big Island?
It'd predominantly be fallout.
Okay, so we would, as I understand it, we would not actually feel much of the effect, although there might be some seismic tremors as a result?
That I don't know. All that other, you know, like you say seismic, tsunami.
Well, I don't think tsunami. I just, as I mentioned to you before we started talking, my husband happens to be a physicist, and that was his area of expertise. And his opinion was that we would probably have no visible sightings of ground level effects, but there would be possibility of people seeing the light flash, and depending on how high up the bomb exploded, because nuclear bombs do not typically hit the ground, they typically are set to explode above the land because that's how they impact in the greatest force, but that we might even be able to see a mushroom cloud depending on how far up they actually had the bomb set to explode. But he said, you know, it wouldn't cause the kind of destruction, physical destruction. But you mentioned fallout. Does state emergency management have any kind of a plan to help us avoid the impact of fallout? Because I'm not really clear that they could have such a plan. So I'm curious to know what they've told you.
Well, the message will address the fallout. And we're looking at three types of impacts: water, land, or air burst. So each has its different features. So we've got to look at those different impacts.
Civil Defense had indicated that there was going to be a different kind of siren tone warning if there's a nuclear bomb. Tell us about that.
So the wailing tone, the attack siren, is planned to come out December 1st. That's what they're tentatively putting out now.
So right now, our tsunami siren warnings that are tested at the beginning of the month, it's a solid tone.
Steady tone.
So what would this nuclear tone be?
It'll be a up and down wailing tone.
Tell me, Jeff, if there is a nuclear bomb dropped, assuming on Oahu, in the unlikely scenario, how would you, Hawaii County Civil Defense, know what to tell people? Because if it drops on Oahu, I don't think they're going to be in any position to talk to you about anything. So what are you going to tell people? How do you know what you're going to tell people? Or is that still under development?
It's still under development. We're working on it. Like I said, there's several scenarios that we have to take into account. And so we want to address each of them. And you're right, we're actually planning for the likelihood that there is no communications as well. So getting the information out early to people, so one, they recognize what the siren is for, and taking the appropriate actions, going to be important, you know, to get out to the public.
And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues, and I'm Sherry Bracken. We're talking today with the administrator of Hawaii County Civil Defense, Talmadge Magno, in an interview we recorded at the Civil Defense Emergency Operations Center in Hilo. You may also see excerpts of this interview at BigIslandVideoNews.com. Next Sunday morning, our guests are Ulu Ching and Eric Arakaki about the Alakahakai Trail, an ancient trail that goes around our island. Island Issues is on the radio on Hawaii Island every Sunday, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM, and posted as a podcast for anytime listening at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Let's get back to Talmadge Magno. I'd like to turn to events that are far more likely to happen here on Hawaii Island than a nuclear strike, because these are things I think that people really do need to be prepared for.
And I think that's important because we've got the volcanoes, the earthquakes. We're still in the hurricane season. More likelihood that that kind of stuff is going to happen. But what we do is we want everybody to be ready for anything. So State Emergency Management put out earlier this year a 14-day preparation, you know, supplies and so forth that people should have. Kind of coincides also with the nuclear threat as well. But, you know, if you can, that's better for you. If you can't, do what you can. We understand that that's quite a bit of an investment financially, and as well as, you know, taking up space in your house and stuff. But preparedness for everything is what we're preaching.
Actually, I found at Costco, they have a bucket, and it has a bunch of freeze-dried food in it, and I actually just stuck it in the back of my pantry if I ever need it. What you say is really important. After the hurricane hit Puerto Rico, and it was pretty clear that they had significant damage and destruction, and the President of the United States said it was really hard to get aid to Puerto Rico because it was an island in the middle of water, big water. We're way further away from the mainland than Puerto Rico is, and so I think people need to really embrace the fact that it is up to each one of us to be prepared and have our own supplies, our own water, because the federal government may not get here, and even Hawaii County Civil Defense and emergency responders on this island, police and fire, depending on what the emergency is, they may not have access to people who need their help or want their help.
Right, so we're wanting people to get prepared. And you mentioned the first responders and so forth, and that's another thing we're trying to create is that the county employees, especially the first responders, police, fire, my civil defense staff, that your family, you are prepared so that in the time of need, your plans have been in place, you know that your family's going to be taken care of, that you can be secure, that they're going to be okay, and you can come to work, you know, to help.
Well, that's really important, and also I would think that our first responders would be focused on people who are injured or seriously in danger, not just people who are hungry or need water, because we should be able to do that. Talmadge, what about the potential, which is very real, of an upcoming Mauna Loa eruption? I've talked with the head of Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, Tina Neal, fairly recently, and they're preparing at Hawaiian Volcano Observatory as not an if on that, but a when. So from the Hawaii County Civil Defense standpoint, tell us what we need to know about a potential Mauna Loa eruption.
Well, we've talked to HVO as well. And of course, in my previous job, I had a pretty good relationship with them, you know, monitoring Kilauea as well as Mauna Loa. And they elevated the alert level for Mauna Loa, what, 2 years ago. And so they've been watching it, and it's kind of maintained that upper level activity. We've got that on our horizons. We'll be probably working with them to put some information out to the public, maybe having some neighborhood meetings and so forth.
If Mauna Loa erupts, one of the things that is true about that and very different from Kilauea is the lava would tend to be more voluminous and it would tend to move more rapidly. And in 1950, I know the lava went from the top of Mauna Loa to the South Kona coast within 3 hours. If it looks like there's that kind of eruption on Mauna Loa, how would Hawaii County Civil Defense notify people who are likely to be in the impact area? What would you do? Because that's a pretty quick-moving disaster.
Yes, and that's something we're definitely looking at. We understand that, and you say 3 hours from eruption to sea level, the population in that area is right along the highways. So you can cut the time even in half, possibly in that worst-case scenario. So we have limited time. Hopefully, you know, preparations, the community outreach that we do will get people prepared. We'll definitely have to make sure that HVO gets us the warnings as soon as they sense any activity. You know, and you have the precursors, the tremor swarms and so forth, you know, increased inflation, all those signs that might lead to an eruption. So they'll give us that information ahead of time. And so hopefully we'll have at least a few hours to get word out. Then we'll go to our normal sequence. After we get the information from them, it'll be either the radio message, our blackboard, and then, of course, in the worst case scenario, you know, we utilize the other government agencies, other departments. We can go door to door and go through neighborhoods.
Well, it sounds like if Mauna Loa had that kind of eruption, and it's never known until the eruption starts what is going to happen, but if it were going to be that type of eruption, it would sound like you would really need door-to-door notification just to make sure people really got the word and realized how serious the threat was. So would all agencies be involved with that somehow? How would you actually do that? What have you talked about with the other local agencies about how you would pull that kind of notification off?
Well, we haven't talked to them specifically related to Mauna Loa, but we utilize all the other departments for high surf, flooding, and so forth. So when we activate the EOC, they're here. We utilize their staff, you know, to do such things like that, to contact the public or whatever the need be, close down roads, monitor areas, and so forth. So they will be as a resource for us to do that.
In 1950, the population was fairly low compared to what the population is today. And one thing that Tina Neal mentioned to me is there's always the possibility of a Mauna Loa eruption actually cutting the highway in two places, which could leave an isolated community if people had not vacated that community. Is that something that you have thought about and how you would actually get people out of that community or get supplies into them if that were to occur?
Actually, I thought about it, and that was actually a reality with Pu'o'o and Royal Gardens. People were isolated up there, and I saw, you know, their resourcefulness and what they did. But yeah, that's something that we're going to have to deal with. Also, one other complication to that area is that it's kind of spotty as far as cell service, radio coverage. And so that's why even more so going into the neighborhoods door to door will probably come into play in those areas.
Is that the kind of event for which you would activate your community emergency response teams around the island, the CERT teams that you train to be sort of civil defense assisters in specific communities?
That's a possibility, but you got to realize that we like to use the community emergency response teams from that particular area. And if they're going to be impacted, you know, we kind of recognize that. We don't want to really use them. They're going to have to take care of their private lives as well. So maybe the adjacent CERT teams. But definitely they're a resource that we could use.
One of the things I observed during the recent hurricanes they've had in Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, is that ham radio operators turned out to be a completely invaluable resource when cell towers were down, electricity was gone, communication systems weren't working. To what extent does Hawaii County Civil Defense work with the ham radio operator community here on the island for that kind of scenario where you might need additional communication capability?
There's several organizations that run ham operators radios on the island and within the state. And so CERT actually has one of them within their ranks. So we do have that capability. And so, you know, like the last case resort, we'll go back to that technology for communications.
Do the ham radio operators come to the Emergency Operations Center if there is an event? Are they an integral part of your team in that way?
They actually have a station within the EOC. And even though I haven't seen them deployed at this point, I was told that they do respond here.
Well, I guess since you came in January, we've been kind of lucky we haven't had a major earthquake, a major tsunami. I know your fingers are crossed as we say that. Yeah, all a matter of luck, isn't it?
Karma, luck, whatever, but I'll take it.
One of the things that Hawaii County Civil Defense got involved with a couple of years ago was when we had a dengue outbreak, which started in the South Kona area, and then there were dengue cases all around the island. Tell us what your current plan is relative to dengue and Zika. And as I ask you that, I have to tell you that I know there was a Zika case on the west side of the island within the past 60 days. Department of Health sprayed for it. It was down at the bottom of Palisades. And I was able to confirm with Department of Health that there was such a case. But there was no public notification. And so that really made me curious about civil defense, your role, what kind of cooperation you're getting from Department of Health to be able to share information so people know what's going on relative to dengue and Zika and what your plan really is for that.
So what's evolved since the dengue outbreak is there's basically a flow chart of what actions we take. They notify this office whenever they have a case. they've had importation cases pretty regularly. People are traveling the globe into these areas that have these mosquito-borne diseases. And so every time they get a detection, Department of Health with their vector control folks, they'll go into those areas. And so far, they've been able to contain it to the point where there's no island transmissions have occurred. That's the state we're in right now. If we move into the next level where there's a transmission on the island, then we move to the next level.
And the next level is what?
We'll monitor the neighborhoods a little bit more closer, you know, screen the people, and then just monitor if the outbreak's spreading, or, you know, we'd have to interview those people to see where they've been, and it just becomes a bigger case.
Why is either Department of Health or Hawaii County Civil Defense not doing some public notification when there are cases of Zika? Because I know it sort of freaks people out when they see the guys in the hazmat suits spraying for mosquitoes, and yet there's no public notification. I mean, it begins to feel like there's an attempt to hide the fact that we do have imported Zika cases. So why is there not some public outreach about that?
Actually, I'm not sure about how that discussion came about or how this evolution came about, but there is some public notification because Department of Health goes to that neighborhood questioning those people there, you know, so that will be the people that will be readily impacted by an infected person in their neighborhood. So there is public outreach.
But not so much if you look at the fact that, for example, I do not live in the Palisades area, but somebody called me and said, the guys are spraying. They thought it was dengue, but I was able to confirm with Department of Health that it was actually Zika. But you know how the Coconut Wireless is. People will say what they will say. Hey, there's a case of dengue. There's a case of Zika. I wonder if Department of Health might not consider working with you a little more closely to just allow some kind of public release that your public information officer could put out just saying, hey, there was a case of Zika contained in an area, came from someplace else, not spread locally, to reassure people more than alarm people. It probably is a small number of people who actually see those folks in the hazmat suits, but enough that people like myself in the media will get phone calls or queries like, what do you know about this? Because they don't want to feel like something's being hidden. So has there been discussion of being a little more open about these kind of things?
No discussion about it, but we can definitely consider it if, you know, the public. But we've had, like I said, there's been numerous, multiple cases of importation, dengue, Zika, and very few calls about what these guys doing in our neighborhood. So based upon the public inquiries, it's like it didn't seem like there was a concern.
Okay. So tell us anything else you'd like us to know about preparations for tsunami. If we get a tsunami warning, what should people know? What should people do?
Well, we're telling people, if you feel a local earthquake to the point where you're having a hard time standing, you need to move to high ground immediately. Rule of thumb is basically a quarter mile inland or at least 50 foot in elevation. Get to that point. Get beyond that if you can. Aside from that, you know, if we've got a incoming tsunami, we'll get the sirens out, we'll get the information out, and do the evacuation of the inundation zones.
In 2010 and 2011, when we had tsunami alerts, my observation was that people were extremely cooperative. I think possibly because of, in 2010, having seen the Indonesia tsunami, people really did evacuate the tsunami zones. And of course, in 2011, people were seeing it in Japan in disbelief and then realizing, though, that it could come here, which it did come here. Anything else folks should know about tsunami?
Well, take it seriously. We've seen the impacts worldwide of the destruction. We haven't had one for a while. We've had them in the past, some destructive ones. So we have the technology now. Pacific Tsunami Warning Center gets us the information timely. Just be in tune with the alert systems that we have and pay attention to that. And do the preparedness stuff. If you're in an inundation zone, make sure your preparations are ready that you can evacuate. And tsunamis, you know, one fortunate side is that it's going to impact just the inundation zones. It's not like a hurricane where island-wide we got to get ready for it.
Well, one thing I think that was a big surprise to many first responders in 2011 was that because we had not had an actual tsunami within any of their lifetimes, really, they didn't realize until this 2011 tsunami hit the Kona side of the island that it isn't the first wave, may not be the second wave. It could be the third wave or the fourth or the fifth that really causes the problem. And when you talked about state emergency management and their role versus the role of Hawaii County Civil Defense, one message is it's only Hawaii County Civil Defense that can say we're all clear, not the state, because the state in 2011 called an all clear, and people thought that applied to the Big Island. It did not. We were hit with tsunami waves after that. So it's particularly important that we pay attention to what Hawaii County Civil Defense says about when we're all clear.
Absolutely. You know, got to realize that we're a chain of islands. Depending on what direction the tsunami's coming from, either the north end or the south end is going to get hit first, and it just takes that sequence of waves to pass through the island. So whether it's coming from the north and, you know, we get hit 45 minutes later than Kauai, that's why we're monitoring what Pacific Tsunami Warning Center is saying and wait till we give the all clear before. And we'll keep every places closed before while the tsunami warning is still active.
I have heard concern from several scientists that the Trump administration plans to cut back on the buoys that provide advanced tsunami warnings. What are you hearing from State Emergency Management or the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center about that? Are they concerned about our ability to be fully prepared in the future, or is that still to be determined?
I'm not hearing anything official, so at this point, that's not an issue to us. We're kind of listening for that, but nothing's being said official.
How about earthquakes? Anything we should know about the potential for earthquakes here, other than if you feel one, then obviously we're in it, but anything you'd like us to know?
The tsunami effects, you can do preparation for earthquakes at your home as well. Have your plans, your evacuation plans. Make sure any large objects in your house are secure. Just do your preparations and take appropriate actions.
It's probably important for folks to stay off the phone if they possibly can afterwards, too, not to tie up the phone network any more than necessary. So emergency calls that really are emergencies can get through, huh?
Absolutely. Maybe go to texting as your means of communication, but have your communication plan also with your other emergency plans so you know where people that you're concerned about, where they're going to go, if they need to go any place, and that should alleviate some of the communication frustrations that people get when the cell phones are all tied up.
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of people don't know that text messages actually go on a smaller, lower bandwidth than regular phone communication, so sometimes a text can get through even when a phone call cannot.
Yes.
As we record this, there have been recently some really major fires in California. And instead of just being brush fires, they've actually been urban fires in cities. Just talk to us about fire preparation and what people should understand if that situation occurs here. We get brush fires, but we have been fortunate enough not really to have the urban fires. So talk to us about that.
There are different communities that are at risk, more fire-prone areas. Same thing for those folks, you know, make sure your evacuation kits are together. Try to minimize the fire danger around your house. Have defensible spaces. You want to build with material that's less likely to burn up. If you can, have sprinkler systems in your houses or your commercial buildings. Be conscious of what you're doing with fire. Be conscious of what you're doing with heated implements inside your house. You know, all that's important.
I happen to live near where the Laco Street fire was a couple years ago, and I know that that advice you just gave about planning to evacuate is really important, because when the police said you may have to evacuate, the question always comes in, what do I take? What is really, really important to me? What can I not afford to lose? And that's something people should certainly think about before they need to think about it. So at the time of being told to evacuate, you're not thinking, well, where is that important document or which of these family photos do I value most? You really have to have that in your head.
Right, and time to evacuate, you don't want to be lugging a bunch of stuff too, so you're going to have to make some decisions as to what you truly need. And if you live in such an environment that that's a good likelihood that's going to happen, you might want to store stuff elsewhere. Just think of what you need. Say if your home would burn down, what would you need to move on to survive, to get things replaced, insurance papers or whatever documents you need.
Talmadge Magno, before we say aloha, what else would you like to share?
To be strong in our community, we need everybody to be prepared. So start with your household. Make sure that you've got your plans, your kits, so forth. Kind of expand it out to your families, your neighbors, maybe your block, your neighborhood. And I think if we can put that all together, we'll build more resilient communities that can withstand a disaster, whatever it is, and then we can recover faster as well.
Very good. Thank you so much, Talmadge Magno, Civil Defense Administrator.
Thanks, Sherry.
Aloha.
Aloha.
And thank you so much to our listeners. You may find out more about Hawaii County Civil Defense at their website, hawaiicounty.gov/civil-defense. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. I'll see you next Sunday morning for another Island Issues. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us, info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.